Hello, hello. Simra, Agelessness, lecture number 23. Agelessness is divine order. Now, how about that? Agelessness is divine order. What is divine order? That's a good question. How do we define divine order? It's like all these things that we're working with, all these things we're talking about, are sort of without definition. You go to the dictionary and you look up divine and you look up order, but divine order, that isn't necessarily a coupled word. Now, what does divine order mean? It means that which is harmonious from the divine point of view. And the divine point of view, you might say the heavenly point of view, the spiritual point of view, from our highest point of view, the divine point of view is something that is very exquisite and very desirable. Dorothea, how would you define the divine point of view of your working on your computer? Now, don't make any remark except for a positive statement that you want to do. How would you say from the divine point of view of working on your computer?
When I do it right, I certainly have a sense of satisfaction.
Working from the divine point of view, I have a feeling of satisfaction in working on the computer. Correct?
If I...
Shush up! My goodness sakes, am I going to have to put a wire basket over you? Shame on you. I said to you, from the divine point of view, how is it that you work on your computer? And you said, if I work from my divine point of view, if I do this, well, I just said that you are working from your divine point of view, and it's not up to you to back away from that, unless you say, I refuse to answer this on the grounds that it might incriminate me. Yeah. To show you that I have no divine point of view, that I don't give a damn about my computer, that I would just as soon throw it in the trash because it's a pain in the neck and a bother to me. Is that what you mean?
No.
No, ho, ho. Well, don't even rattle that out. Now, once again, from the divine point of view, from the divine point of view, how would you say you work with your computer?
From my divine self. I work with my computer with satisfaction.
And? Ease?
Ease?
With ease. Yeah, with it's easy. And it is, as you say, satisfaction rewarding. And efficient?
Efficient.
And what are some other words? Come on.
In annoyingness.
I wouldn't say that so much, but okay. Any other word?
Creative.
What?
Creative.
Creative, yes, creative.
In tune.
Yeah. She's done that, but in tune.
Spontaneous.
Huh?
Spontaneous.
Yeah. I'm trying. I am seeking to draw from you words that show the creative use of her computer, how she is using it to express her magic of artistic touch, how she is using it to use it as a writing tool to bring out the many words that she has to express her ideas and thoughts. You follow what I'm saying?
Tuned in.
With
utter perfection.
With utter perfection.
With delight.
With delight. Ah, now we're getting some places. Utter perfection, delight.
Enthusiasm.
How about that?
Intuition. Magic.
What?
She said magic.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Dorothea?
Yeah?
I hope... I know that you have recorded all of these wonderful thoughts in your mind.
In
your computer, and you know on your brand new computer that you're using these thoughts so beautifully and so wonderfully, right?
Oh, right.
Right. And they all are to the accompaniment of what? Beautiful
music.
Music. Yes, beautiful music. And that's what you're going to experience when you go home too. Beautiful music. We all love the concert hall. I bought that disc so I could use it for whatever I wanted, and it is really nice. So, okay. Agelessness is divine order. Now, you are agelessness in divine order. Now, divine order is chaos. Chaos, we have come to understand, is utter confusion by people who think it's utter confusion, but scientists have taken it beyond that level and found it to be a most intensive, intriguing, orderly sequence of activities that are so complex that the mind of the ordinary person seeing it with their naked eye, so to speak, cannot see how orderly it is. And it's really quite amazing. We work in a very chaotic universe. I mean, you look at the sky up there today, and up in the sky were dark clouds that were surely going to rain, and cold clouds that were so cold. The cold clouds were coming up from the south. That seems kind of strange, doesn't it? But they were coming up from the south, from Mexico. And there was a big bundle of clouds over here that were black and wonderfully threatening of rain, and another bundle over here, and another bundle over here, and then they would join together, and then they'd separate. Now, what's going on up there? What is that chaos?
Divine order.
Divine order. They are harmoniously working together with the winds in the sky, with the manner in which the updrafts and the downdrafts. They are so, if you could really be in tune with it, as we will be, I can imagine there are some computer systems that show that divine order in computer layouts, in sky figures, you know what I mean? It shows how they interweave and interloop and intermove around the different clouds, and they're all in a very orderly way, in a very beautiful, dramatic way. And then what is it that the medical science does, or actually not medical science, but for medical science, what does science do? They put a drop of ink, which doesn't hurt anything, in the bloodstream or in whatever they're streaming, and then they can tell where the action is moving, where the blood is going, where it's being stopped, and where it's being free to flow, and all these neat things. Well, now, they will throw a tincture of color into the sky, into not the sky, but into the computer readout of the sky, you know, to show how the clouds are weaving with one another and how they're blending. And I think we had a great teacher here the last 3 months, and that was Heinz. And he got onto my table, my tablet computer, and he worked on there, and he showed us how he could take his paintbrush and he could run it across the screen and bring all sorts of beautiful colors through there, and how he could interweave other colors, and he could make little dots through there, you know, just by touching it with the pen. But the pen would automatically make dots. He didn't have to go dot, 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 dot. He just pressed the dot pen, and it made little dot, 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 dots. And each little dot was a different color. And what a grand display. And then he would have the colors go underneath the other colors, and then he'd have the colors on top disappear and the colors in between blend. And what a beautiful thing, you know. I will practice that after a while and see how I come up with some of these things, because it sounds so enticing. But Heinz took a great deal of time to work on that and to figure it out, the program that was already there, and utilize it. But you see, what I'm saying by this, the clouds in the sky are manipulated in much the same way by the air currents, by the streams of air through the sky, and perhaps by some mental thought on our part. As we look at the cloud and we say, I see the blue sky, poof, the cloud is gone, you know. As we see these various things, it's kind of exciting, because we are in control of the chaos of the sky. Can you imagine that? We're in control of the chaos of the sky. Now, I have told our people who call in from the hurricane states and the tornado states and all these different states where people have these games they like to play. And they said, now what are we going to do about this hurricane that's coming in now? It's coming in tomorrow night and it's going to go in this area. And I said, no, it's going to go up in the sky. The hurricane is going to have its dance up in the sky, and it will not touch the earth at all, and it will just dissipate itself after its dance and then go away. And that's what it did. That's what it did. Now, people say, well, Herb, if you're so darn good, why don't you get to work on these, doing these things and take care of it? I don't care. That's the responsibility of the people living in those areas if that's what they want to do. People call us and they ask us to treat with them, and we say, here is how you treat. You see it done. You see it wonderfully done. Divine order is chaos. You see, divine order is chaos. And so as we say to these people, you treat. You put the cause in motion. You put these things in motion for yourself, and you bring about the results. Now, do the results come? Yes, very much, and very real. The results are very perfect. And as these people have these results, what happens? They think it's natural. They think, what a interesting chance that it went that way, that it didn't come through. You see, they don't want to believe it because they don't want to be in charge of it. That is, they think they don't want to be in charge of it. And they think that what they want to do is to have it spontaneously, or what did you say? Spontaneously? It happens spontaneously and without a cause. Well, everything has a cause. And it is beautiful. So, what do we do? What do we do now? It's just like Stefan. He wrote a letter, email this morning, right now, and in his email, he said he's been doing treatment work for different people. And in the treatment work, he took to heart some of the concerns that the people had, because he felt very close to them, and he felt very, very touched by what they were going through. And then he woke up himself. And he woke up and he found out that, hey, all I can do is speak my word that it's done and let it alone. If I let it alone and don't worry about it and keep worry, building it inside of myself and keep it going, I let it alone, it's done. And he said, I let it alone and it was done. He says, hurrah. And of course, that's true. That's true. When we have circumstances that come into our life, that come to our attention, we don't overwhelm them, we don't over-worry them. Oh yes, we will say, I'm home perfect, until that is our natural way of thinking. And once it's our natural way of thinking, we still say it, but not quite so intensely and so much, but we still say it. But the thing is, he learned the lesson, which we all would like to learn sooner or later, and that is, speak your word and then let it be. When people call us here at the Healing Ministry, the Worldwide Healing Ministry, they call us and they tell us what their desire is, and we say, it is done. And sincerely, we're not just getting off the hook for it. We say, it's done. And then it's done. And the people go about their work and it's done. And how interesting. They never call back to tell us that it's done. They never call back to say that it's done. They never call back to say, oh, here's $100,000 for saving me my house and stuff like that. You know, which, not that we want that or don't want that. That's not the point. But the thing is, they take it so natural. And I compliment us on our treatment work, that we encourage them to treat it in such a way that they take it so natural, just like it's the most normal thing in the world to do. And that's what our game is. Our game is, treatment is the most normal thing in the world to do, and it brings about the best results in the most normal way. Makes sense? Makes a lot of sense. Now, whenever you're into it for money, you can get money. If we wanted to be in this business to make money, we have several cut and dried, very simple ways to do it. And one of them would be like some of our brother ministers. They send out little tags of cloth. They're called prayer cloths. And this cloth has been prayed over. You send your donation in for it. This cloth has been prayed over. And so when you pray with this cloth, we're praying with you. And you're right here in your hand as you look at the cloth, you know. And they're little gimmicks, you know. But they make these people millions and millions of dollars. And isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
Now, yes, it's wonderful. But the thing is, do these people get results?
Yes.
Probably. Yeah, I would think. Oh, yeah.
And where do they get the results from?
On themselves.
Ellen, what did you say? If they believe.
Yes.
Where they believe. If they believe, and it's in themselves that they believe.
Yes.
Now, they don't know that. But you see, the guy with the prayer cloth isn't going to tell them. Because he doesn't want to cut off his source of income from them. You know. And this is the same with the church today. The church doesn't want to tell you God is within you. Because if the church tells you God's within you, then the church isn't necessary anymore. Mm-hmm. You can go direct. You don't have to go parcel post, you know. And it's kind of nice to go direct. Now, isn't it interesting how some churches say, we have a direct phone line to God? And I think to myself, my goodness sakes, we don't have a direct phone line to God.
We are God.
We are God. And you, I haven't heard a call from you, but we're God for ourselves. We're God for ourselves. And that's the only thing that we do. Now, those are points that are very important. Divine order is chaos. Remember that, because that's a good, solid point. Okay? Now, divine order is oneness. How is divine order oneness? We think one thought, one idea, and we have one result. Now, that's one way of looking at it. Oneness is allness. I am the oneness. Now, what was our theme here for our agelessness from the very beginning? We had a wonderful theme here. Remember that? Anybody remember what the theme was? I don't have my green sheet here. Maybe it's here. No. One very, very good statement. Ellen, you got my folder. And in my folder, it is in there. So, oneness is who we are. Oneness is all that is. And you have your little folded sheets there. And on the front cover, underneath agelessness, it gives the term.
One age for all.
One age for all. Thank you, Ellen. One age for all is what it is. One age for all. That's the term I wanted for you. One age for all. There it is. One age for all. Beautiful. One age for all. You sign them? Uh-huh. Okay. One age for all. Agelessness is one age for all. That means everyone is the same age, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's the same age, ageless. Now, what is your age, Gertrude? How old are you? Are you 1, 2, 3 million years old? Are you 10 days old? Are you anything? What is it that indicates your age?
Ageless.
You're ageless, that's true, but what indicates where you are in your agelessness if you are anywhere in your agelessness? There is no telltale indication, is there? There's no indication of where you are in your agelessness. Are you ageless like a baby or like a teenager or like an adult? Where are you ageless? Are you ageless like God? That sounds good, doesn't it? Ageless like God. Is God, does God have an age? When was God born? When did God, is God supposed to die? You know, some churches teach that God is dead, you know, because people are not coming to church. They say God is dead. Well, what a silly thing to say. I don't know that they can kill them off quite that easily, but they get some people believing that they can. What are we going to do? We are, our statement here, one age for all, and divine order is oneness. So, one age for all. Do you know what that means? That means agelessness. One age for all. Whether it's a little child, it's ageless, or whether it's a antiquarian or antiquarian, whatever name these ancient people have, it's or that. What is it? One age for all. Now, think of where that puts you. Think of that, where that puts you. Now, Sylvia is going around here acting like she is a young lady. Now, Sylvia has no right to do that, because there's only one age for all. We're all the same. And Sylvia is lying to us. Sylvia has been around for the last 8,000 years, and she wants us to believe that she is just a young spring chicken, so to speak. And we're not going to believe it, because we know that she is what?
Ageless.
And no matter what game she tries to play, we know she's ageless. Now, is she going to win some people into thinking that she has an age? Yeah, some people. And what's going to happen with those people that you win thinking that you have an age?
They have age.
They're going to limit you. They're going to say, you're 3,000 years old now, act like a 3,000-year-old woman, you know? And you say, whoops, I opened my big mouth. I thought I was, you know, showing off. I'm 3,000 years old. Well, look, you pipsqueak, I'm 20,000 years old. What are you talking about, 3,000? You know? And we don't do that. We don't do that. You are one age for all. And that one age for all is agelessness. You are ageless. You have no age. We want to build that into our consciousness so beautifully, so strongly, so wonderfully, that we're untouched by age. We're untouched by anything that might say to us what age is or might be. You see? So, divine order is oneness. Oneness of all. Each one of you know everything. Each one of you are everything. Now, each one of you was Jesus Christ. Each one of you was Moses. Each one of you was Joshua. Joshua took the battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Oh, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. Now, each one of you were Joshua. Each one of you were Solomon. Solomon. Each one of you were every single being ever to live on the earth, ever will live on the earth, and all right now, right now. Can you imagine Ingeborg as Marie Antoinette? Can you imagine Ingeborg as Marie Antoinette?
Why not?
Why not? Ingeborg, what would you say to your people when they were running out of food if you were Marie Antoinette?
Eat cake.
Let them eat cake. Now, you see, she knows. She said that. And the people ate cake, and they were very happy. And they laughed and danced and sang.
Yeah,
right? What, Dorothea?
They cut off her head.
Well, that came later.
First
they ate cake and laughed and danced. And the only people who cut off her head were the people who were looking for an adventure. They didn't have a movie that evening. The theater was closed. And so they called for, hey, all these actions that took place in the courts of the world where violence was done by people or things, it's just because they didn't have a TV set. They didn't have a book to read. They didn't have a bottle of wine and a loaf of bread and dal, you know. They didn't have that. And so they...
Sorry, Taylor.
Huh?
a storyteller, somebody who tells stories.
A storyteller.
A storyteller. That's right. John wasn't there. Yeah. John wasn't there. And if John had been there, what would have happened?
I would have been sitting around all of John.
They'd all be sitting around.
The heads would have been left on.
The heads would have been left on, right. But you see, that's what it is. It says, one age for all. Now, let me ask you this question. Was John there?
Yes.
Was he telling stories?
Yes.
Did he have a big audience?
Yes.
But he didn't have everybody, did he?
Not everybody, obviously, no.
And why didn't he have the king and queen? Because they were afraid to come out and play. They were afraid that the crowd was going to do what they said they were going to do. But was it the crowd that did it?
No, it was them themselves.
It was them themselves. Mm-hmm. They created that for themselves. And that's fine. That's just fine. You know, when all of these things are said and done, it's like the movie last night. The two young men went to scare the sheriff, and the sheriff shot at them, and they didn't die. And so the sheriff ran off, "My God, I can't do anything," you know? And he was gone. He didn't even go tell people. He just ran. He probably was waiting until the next county. But how many times do you shoot people dead and they don't die? You know? That's a terrifying thing. And he shot both of them. And both of them didn't. What an unusual experience. But you see, this is when your oneness, when your allness, are those boys, having been in the experience they were in, the only ones who ever had been shot at and did not die?
No.
It happens often. It happens often. And many times when it happens on the police force, they usually show their little badge that got hit or something like that. And it gives them a great deal of pressure, but they didn't get killed. Now, you see, we're living in a world of dreams and imagination and ideas and games. And these dreams and imagination and ideas and games that we play, what's happening in them? What's happening in them is that whatever we want to create in there, we create. Whatever chaos we want to demonstrate, we demonstrate. Now, like the movie last night, the things took place plunk, plunk, plunk in a very orderly way. The lady hit the guy on the head and he died, and she and her husband got put in jail, and the two sons escaped. And the one son went to the girlfriend and said, "Here's what our plan is. Will you help us?" And she said, "Sure." So she went in to help with the plan, and she had a ball. Oh, she had a ball. She was laughing her head off. And she got them out and sent them on their way. And she knew she wasn't going to participate in the water. She knew that she was in charge and strong enough to handle it. And you see, it's a game. Now, how could each little a vignette of that game take place exactly like it did? How could the two men, the boys, come and scare the sheriff? How could she go running to the sheriff in her night clothing to make the sheriff think she was being chased, you know? And all these things were chup, chup, chup. And then they sit outside afterwards, and the little love scene, you know, rather long love scene for people who are trying to run away, but they played their game. And what they were trying to indicate to you was, all time is now. There was no rush. They could have stayed there another 2 hours and no one would have chased them, because that wasn't in their script. They told them not to come until after they left. That was in the script. And so they could have stayed there much longer. You say, "But go, go, go." It makes a little more excitement for you and I as we watch the show. But they know what they're doing. They know. They wrote the script. They wrote the program. We write the programs for our own life. We write the programs of our oneness. We write the programs for our allness. Now, why did you, as Jesus, want to be hung on the cross? Silly, huh? Why did you? Hey, doesn't make any difference. You're immortal.
Untouched.
Now, what if these one of these kids was hung on the cross? What would happen to him?
No.
They'd take him down, and then he'd push the stone aside and come out. Mm. You know? Where would his feet be whole?
Sure.
Would all of the fluids of his body still be there?
Yes.
Would he be whole and perfect?
Yes.
Do you believe it?
Yes.
That's the truth. That's the truth. And that's the game you want to play. You see, we are one. And now, if Sylvia had been in charge of the event of Jesus at the cross, she might have handled it differently. You know, if I was there, I didn't mind the naked Jesus on the cross, and everything would have been fine. But somebody else, they said, oh, he's got to be covered, you know. And that was actually in the medieval ages when they did that. But at the time of Jesus, it was to embarrass them, to make them feel embarrassed.
To make them feel naked.
Naked, hanging on the cross. And usually they hang them upside down. Because that is the worst of the saying, you're naughty, that sort of thing, you know. And interesting, isn't it? Now, why did they have it? Why did they have it? As I say, they had them on the cross because they had to show that it really happened. Because there was nothing in the history books that it would ever come and prove it if they hadn't done something like that. If they hadn't done this and had Pontius Pilate do his thing and Herod do his thing and all these people do their things, and come to find out, some of those people weren't even around. Interesting, isn't it? Some of the people were not even around. They were out of the country at the time, or they were not in office yet. If they got in office 10 years later, you know? And this is true. You read these things, and then you think to yourself, my God, here we believe this stuff, and here are the facts that show it. Well, you don't care. You don't care about the facts. You only care about the content and idea of the story. Because the content and the idea is what you want. Now, do you believe it? Most of the time, yes. And if you believe it, why do you believe it? Because it's an interesting story. Your children come running in the house and tell you stories of things that are happening to them, and you say, oh, come on now, you expect me to believe that? But no, you don't do that. You believe them. You say, okay, let's go check on this. Let's go check on this. And sometimes it's true. Maybe not quite as grand as the children painted it, but it's true. And wouldn't you be unhappy with yourself if you didn't believe it and found out later that it was true? Wouldn't you be sorry that you didn't check into it and you didn't trust your own dearly beloved kinder, you know? You didn't follow what the children said to you? Wow. So this is why divine order is oneness. We are one as all. We are one in and as each event that takes place in our life. Now, Ellen does not want any rain. If she wanted rain, we'd have rain. But these big rain clouds will go over and completely pass us by because she doesn't want rain. And the only reason she doesn't want rain is she doesn't want to have to straighten out the roads again. When it rains, the roads get a little muddy and ruddy, and so they have to be filled in again. And she doesn't want to do that. And the only reason she doesn't want to do that is because Lydia didn't agree to run the tractor and straighten them out. Now, Lydia, if you had only agreed to run the tractor, we could have moisture here and raise crops of beautiful plants all over the place, you know? Now, tell her, you going to run the tractor for her?
No.
Did you get a message, Ellen?
Yeah. Say that. Oh, I played Brian doing that. I played Brian doing that, you can say.
Aha! We don't have rain.
We can't have rain.
Then the roads don't get affected.
What's that?
I like it.
Then the roads don't get affected.
We have rain that doesn't affect the roads. Yep. Just a fine rain.
Wouldn't it be lovely to have a gentle, soaking rain that didn't come down any more than the ground could absorb at any moment when it came down?
A fine sprinkle.
Now, when is it going to happen?
Now.
Is that right, Gertrude?
Yes.
Are you going to be like Katerina and the kids run naked out in the rain and dance out in the rain and just say, oh, it's wonderful. Remember when That was it. Was July seminar, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they had a good time. They had a very good time. And you see, this is what rain is for. Rain is to be danced in. That's why the Indians call it the rain dance. And they're all out dancing in the rain before it falls and after it falls and while it's falling. But it's part of the game. Okay, Ingeborg. Ingeborg says, Herb, you do digress. Divine order is isness.
Oneness.
We did the oneness. Yeah, now we're on isness. Now, what does it mean, divine order is isness?
It just is.
It just is. It just is. Now, that's a very simple way of saying it, isn't it? How would you say that, Sylvia? Divine order is isness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Divine order is without condition, without judgment.
Forget the without.
It's
unconditional.
It's unconditional.
And it is acceptance. No judgment, acceptance. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Non-judgmental, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, that's a word, Ellen, we might remember. Acceptance. Non-judgmental and acceptance. Acceptance is a positive word for that. Good idea. Okay, go on. Come on, we're milking the pot here now. Come up with some more beautiful things.
Is divine order is absolute?
I would buy that. Go on. Are you dry?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, divine order is isness. And isness means that it is a point. It does not mean it is the allness from this point of view. It means it's the isness. It is every idea, every unique individuation of a point. Those are all words. It's a unique expression of a point. And that is an interesting thing. Yes, Ellen, you have your sticker on your nose there.
Divine order is.
Divine order is ness. Now, what does ness mean, Ellen?
It's a condition.
What does S mean? Ness mean?
A condition. Ness.
The quality.
The quality of being is.
Yeah, but it's
It's not a condition. It's the quality of being is.
Okay.
You might call it a condition, but better to say quality is how I like to use it. The quality of what it is. And so it is, what does quality mean? That means all of the ramifications as they are included in what it is. In other words, if you have a pen, the isness of a pen is its ability to write, its ability to contain ink, its ability to have a shell for it, its ability to be used, and perhaps its usability, usefulness. And so isness as a pen is the quality of the pen. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the quality of the isness of Ellen?
Divine order.
Divine and ageless.
To start. What, Ellen?
She said ageless.
Ageless, yeah. Divine order, ageless.
Spiritually whole.
Spiritually whole.
Spiritually whole. Thank you for enunciating. Spiritually whole, yeah.
Absolute.
Go on.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Perfection.
Perfection.
Purity.
Yeah. Divine order is isness. Now, I don't want these just to be words, and words that we pack something into it that don't really touch us. I could make them all fire words, and I could make them all important things that would just be something we'd want to remember forever, but we'd get too excited about it. And I don't want you to be excited about these things. I want you to be excited about the concept of what?
Agelessness.
I'm sorry?
Agelessness.
Of you living in the consciousness of agelessness, which is our topic, which is our theme. Because if you get excited about all these little areas of it, you sometimes forget the agelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the agelessness is what we feel, we see, we are, we do with our very being, because this is what we live and this is what we express. Now, were the Tates ageless? They drank this water which would never let them die, grow old, be ill, be injured in any way. What else would they not do, do you think? They wouldn't die, wouldn't grow old, wouldn't be ill, wouldn't... well, hey.
Eternal life.
Yeah, eternal life, but now look.
If, what was your question? What
I'm going to give you another answer.
What else?
What? I mean, here we have the Tates, who drink this water, which made them immortal. Okay. I was looking in my net for the word Pan, P-A-N. And in there, it gave the name of all the Greek gods. And what it said about the Greek gods came in two types. One was immortal, and one was mortal. A mortal Greek god. In other words, it could be killed, or it could not be killed. And the immortal Greek gods all basically were very, very good. They were loving, caring, sharing, beautiful gods. The gods that were mortal, that could be killed, they were toughies. They were always out for battle, for wars, and all these other things. And I thought, that's quite significant. Here, something that is immortal, and could do anything it wanted to do without being any recriminations against it, doesn't do it. Now, let's take this a step further to the Tates. The Tates are immortal. They cannot be killed. They cannot... So, they could be a point of good for the universe, for themselves. We say universe, and that's unfortunate. But they could be a point of good for themselves. Could this 17-year-old be one of the most fantastic... What do 17-year-olds do? They like to adventure. They like to play around. They like to do these things all the time. And they never tire of it, do they?
No.
All right? So this 17-year-old immortal being would never tire of it. Now, what did this 45-year-old man want to do? He wanted to open new territories and open new country, and he wanted to start a home and start a farm. Could he not start a home, start a farm, have everything, and be immune, not immune, but invisible to the community as to his immortality?
Yeah, of course.
How many gods are invisible in Greek mythology to the people? Most of them. Most of them have no idea that that god is standing there or coming in. If the god wants them to know that he's coming, he comes in a big flash, you know. He comes in a great big wind. He comes in a whirlwind, usually. Excuse me. And as he comes in this whirlwind, then his beingness shows eventually, you know, that he's there. But the immortal ones are like that. Now, this 45-year-old man, he could have constantly been building new homes and building... He could have been what do we call these builders who build subdivisions and stuff like that. He could have been building subdivisions. He could have been building all these sort of things. And then as soon as he finishes one area, he goes on to another. And then he's in another area where he's not known. And he never ages. And nobody knows that he doesn't age because they don't compare him to the previous place where he had been. You follow me?
Right.
So he could have new subdivisions here, there, and everywhere. And what about the woman? The woman had a very many nice sensitivities. She was interested in cooking. She was interested in herbs and spices. She was interested in all sorts of things. What a fabulous person she could be for running a restaurant, you know? Or having a large family, or working in an orphanage and feeding, you know, hundreds of children and giving them gourmet meals, you know, meals of the finest quality that would benefit their life. You see, this is what immortality, to me, says they do the thing that delights them the most, and they never tire of doing it. They never tire of doing it because that's their age. You see, what you went through when you were 20 years old, when you were 40 years old, when you were whatever, was great. You didn't tire of it. And if you would do it again and again, and you'd never tire of it because it was always brand new to you. You were immortal in it. You follow that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, that is the beauty of this sort of thing. When you see a movie like Tate Everlasting, and you see the people in it, and you see them disenchanted, disenchanted by the idea that they live forever and they have no uniqueness. They cannot love somebody because they'll grow old and die in their very presence. Hey, look, you immortal person, if you are immortal, teach to them the value of living in the now. You see, they could learn to teach themselves the value of living in the now. They could then teach all that come into their experience the value. Did this young girl believe them almost immediately?
Yes.
Did she flow with them? Did she know the sincerity of what they were doing? Did she know the intensity of what they were doing? And did she know how the redneck attitude might be opposing people who have this gift? Could be easily be. She was tuned into it right away. Of course, that's the way the story was written. But for our benefit, she was tuned into it right away. And did she have any fright of these people in their immortality?
No.
And you see, this is a big point. We need have no fright of being immortal. We need have no fright of living in immortality. It is a beautiful, fabulous, glorious experience. A beautiful, fabulous, glorious experience. And I do believe, and I really don't care what your attitude is, but I do believe it would be a smart idea if we would adjourn shortly. We're almost done with our second lecture anyhow, 3 more minutes, and go and see that movie again.
Yeah.
Because we are now ready to look at it with different eyes. We are ready to see it with a different intensity. And what I want to say to you is, each character in that movie is you. Each immortal being is you. And it is your own chaos of thought of how you're going to handle being immortal. How you're going to handle being ageless. You know, never aging. How you're going to handle living your life from that fabulous point of view of being the all. Now, just stop and think in your craziest imagination. It doesn't fit anything that I teach, but just stop and think in your craziest imagination. Do you think the immortal God, you know, up on cloud nine, as we have thought about him in our past religious experiences, do you think that God ever got tired?
No.
Ever got bored?
No.
And there weren't things that it wanted to be active in and creative in and having a ball in? Never. Well, why should the Tates ever be bored? Why should you, as ageless, immortal beings, ever be bored? Think about it.
It's true.
Think about it.
Although I must say that Jesse, the youngest, he wasn't bored. He enjoyed it.
Okay, I agree. But I'm looking at 4 people.
I know.
Yeah. And yes, Jesse, now, what was Jesse's blessing?
To be 17.
He was being 17, where you never tire of anything. Life has so many adventures. Do you think that the man and woman went to the Eiffel Tower? Do you think they ran up it barefoot? Do you think they stood up on top of his private Eiffel Tower there and looked out over the beautiful sunset? Do you think that they swam in the cool water? You see, this is where you want to involve yourself in being the immortal being that you are, in the world that you have created for yourself, in the life that you've created yourself, and in all the magic that you've created for yourself. See, this is what it's all about. This is what we want to be in. This is what we want to know. This is what we want to have. It's a glorious thing, isn't it? Really a glorious thing. Yes, each one of you is more blessed than you'll ever know. Divine order is allness, and it's fantastic. Amazing how I do these things. They just turn out perfectly. 50 minutes. But that's the way it should be. So let's put on our bib and tucker and wander over to the studio and see the film once again and look at it now with the eyes that these people are immortal, which we know. These people are ageless, which we know. They live forever. And these people are glorious, which we know. And this is the important, wonderful, fantastic thing about it all. Okay.
You could go over straight away and start with the movie.
Ellen, what are we doing?
Yeah, I would say so.
Go straight away and see the movie. And then
have dinner.
Yeah, then have dinner.
Okay.
Okay? So I will... Yes, okay. So, I love you, I love you, I love you.
I have a